Turkey, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. It's a minute past the hour on this, the sixth day of June 2017. It is Tuesday, Titanic Tuesday. It's also the 73rd anniversary of the Normandy landings, the landings at, the landings on the beaches of Fortress Europa. Remember, we've got it. 73 years after we began to take Europe back from the Nazis, there's actually a neo-Nazi group called Identity Europa, who are in the main a group of diehard, unreconstructed, unrepentant, you know, Nazis who are wholly supportive of, Trump. Kind of takes a little bit of the starch out of that whole defeating fascism the world over. I guess we didn't, did we? What did Lincoln say in the Gettysburg Address? That those who had died here shall not have died in vain? Yeah. That. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that's where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room, as I am doing right now, and joining the merry band of folks who hang out there every evening and participate in the madcap multimedia real-time wacky zany extravaganza that is the Horn chat room during the hours that the program is live. If you pick out a screen name and a password and do as I just did, you'll be met by Anatole and Hoghead and Laborman and Silent R. Lamar and Squeaky and Steve from Georgia Stan and V.T. Blom. And more as the program continues. All capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has chosen this evening the discretion as the better part of valor, and has chosen not to fold any space at all, and you'll recognize him simply as Sparky in the chat room. It's the 73rd anniversary of the D-Day invasions, probably the single most complicated human undertaking in all of recorded human history. As far as one day. I mean, there were others, but it was pretty logistically complex. Um, And it's hard to see an anniversary like this and not realize that, well, we let a lot of that victory slip away. That's kind of all there is to it. We did. Because fascism is real and fascism is here. The question is, how long will it be here? This is a listener-supported broadcast operation. There are no ads here. You will not hear, the program won't be broken up to bring you any exhortations to purchase little herbal capsules that'll make hair grow on your bald pate or create stiffies where stiffies weren't already. No, ads for vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls out over radios built by Bose that sit on floors by lumber liquidators in a Medicare-authorized knee brace or anything like that. We're just going to engage in some progressive conversation. Now, we finished the evening with a significant deficit last night. I am proud to say that we got that deficit down. Fundraising goal. No, I'm sorry, $305. We got it down to $305. This evening's $200, $105 from yesterday. $305. And that extra $5 makes for ciphering that makes my little head hurt. But anyway, we need to raise $305 this evening to keep even with the week so that we don't have a $505 fundraising hole tomorrow or a $705 hole on Thursday and then a $905 fundraising freaking miracle on Friday. I'm trusting that the little waifs with their noses pressed against the window panes over at Daily Coast got that last $16,000 they needed on May 31st because their website's still up. But we do. We need to raise $305 in any combination. If you want to help out, go to headonradionetwork.com. Click on the Contribute tab. And, then just fill out the little... there's just a few fields to fill out. If you would like to become part of the subscription crew, the people who set it and forget it, just put $10 or $20 or whatever it is you want to put in the amount field there and click that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation and you'll be done. Getting some tech notifications from Brother Deacon Asa. He says buffering like mad here. So let's talk about that for a minute. If you don't want to be a subscriber, whatever, just want to help out this evening, however you go about it, just put the amount in the field and continue through the process. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, and some people do, the mailing address, the standard old school mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And it's my understanding that Boss Man Wayne is home now, so after a few days of recuperation, he'll be up and running around. He told me yesterday that within 3 hours of having had his surgery, they had him up and... eating a little bit of food, which was really exciting for him because he hadn't been eating, you know, food. So congratulations to Boss Man Wayne. He'll be up and hitting the mailbox and carrying on as he was In no time flat. So there's that. Now, the buffering business. I'm sorry. It is, however, not always on this end. We had some buffering issues. We got those solved. I'm seeing absolutely nothing happen with the audio coming out of here. So it is apparently something that's going on at the White Rose Society server. If you experience crazy, crazy, terrible buffering, check out headon.live, headon.live, and see if it's the same there. Oh, okay, well, good. Steve from Georgia Stan telling me, sounds good here. All right, well, maybe that's a good sign. And by the way, this is something that just landed a few minutes ago relative to technical issues. I got a note from PayPal, and it said that between the dates of May the 14th through the 22nd, roughly 8 days, they had an issue where subscription payments weren't completed correctly, and that they reversed the original payment to you know, whomever it was, and they said that it that thing disabled then the subscriptions. Not all of them, just the ones that happened between the 14th and the 22nd of the month. So if, in fact, you were one of those people and you got a notation saying that your subscription payment had been turned back to you or whatever, please feel free to re-up here, because it would be most, most appreciated. Okay, that's between the 14th and the 22nd of last month. Okay, then. It is Titanic Tuesday. I've been told by Reverbo and by Eric in Pennsylvania, Bamistan, that he popped over to headon.live, and he's all good there. Thanks for letting me know. Same, and thank you, Reverbo, as well. VT Blom said headon.live is strong here this evening. I have got to, when the opportunity presents itself and he has the time to sit down and talk about it, I've got to have a tech conversation with Ben. Because he put in a mighty amount of work switching over to the new server. And it's a little troubling that we're still having some of these issues. Okay, so that takes care of the housekeeping. Oh, well, not quite. Another reminder. The program's only 2 hours this evening. Now, tomorrow we'll be back to our three-hour schedule. But it's only 2 hours this evening because at 9 p.m. I'll be filling in around the campfire for the Malloys. And as a result, it'll be necessary to shut things down at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time here to get everything swapped over to get that started. Okay. And then we're back to our regular time schedule tomorrow evening. As far as coming attractions are concerned, as I mentioned, we will definitely not be on the air Tuesday evening next week, a week from tonight. May not be on the air Monday evening, depending on Agnes's preferences for when we travel, etc. So, in addition to in addition to getting out of the hole we're in this evening, we need to knock down, divide out. I don't know. We could either have a fundraising goal a week from tomorrow of $600, or we can work $200 in over the course of, say, tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday. Yeah, we'll see how it plays. If we can knock out the $300 this evening, that would be. But anyway, look, I can't tell you how I loathe talking about fundraising. It's a monumental consumer of precious broadcast time, and it's just annoying. I'd like to think that it's better, and you can tell me, it's better than having to listen to some ad for some godforsaken medication that'll, make your nose hair grow long. Side effects include causing your nose hair to grow long enough to braid rope. But still, it's annoying. So that's where we are this evening. As far as scheduling is concerned, we'll end the program at 8 p.m. this evening. And then next week, no program Tuesday, possibly no program Monday. It all depends on how the boss wants to play it. All right, then. It is Titanic Tuesday, the 6th day of June, 2017. We've begun to dry out a little bit here today. Hopefully, I'll be able to get back into my weed eating again soon. This is the labor of a summer doing this. But it's also good for me, and I enjoy it. But Titanic Tuesday being Titanic Tuesday, of course, we celebrate manifestations of Titanic intellect. Ordinarily, those manifestations are of the right-wing variety, because the actual name of the day, goes back many, many years ago now to when our buddy Jim was listening to America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, in the morning monotone, who paused from reading the newspaper to people every morning to take a call from one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers, who asked him, "Steve, how come it is you reckon that there is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? Because I done seed them when I was working down in the mines. I look up in the top, the rooftop, and there was seashells and ferns and all kinds of shit. We ain't nowhere near the beach, Steve." To which America's most profound monotone replied, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." And so it was that Titanic Tuesday was born. Still no word on the movement of the little Titanic server summoning bell. No. Man, that Titanic table is going to be an archaeologist's dream if we can ever just figure out how to stay down there long enough to get it all. All kinds of stuff down there. But we do. We celebrate Titanic intellect on this day. You know, the kind of intellect that says, that when presented with the information that there's a great big iceberg up ahead that's going to win any the battle of any collision, the kind of intellect that says, kill, full steam ahead. Right? And we've got an abundance of it to deal with this evening. Yes, Lord, yes, we do. And of course, the vast majority of these of the people who engage in Titanic intellect. Well, they're right wingers. They're birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birchers, booger eaters, baggers, trumpansies. Let's start with my dirty little habit. The thing that I'm into every morning. And my day began with screaming when I realized that wholly owned subsidiary of the hydrocarbon industry, EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, was going to be on that program on MSNBC this morning, in which it appears, if you did not know better, that poor old Joe Scarborough is actually trying to learn how to be a journalist. But he sat back and let Wee Willie Geist handle the front end of the interview with Scott Pruitt, and Scott Pruitt was just babbling bullshit along, and Wee Willie wasn't doing a lot of pushback. And then Squint jumped in.
Paris, which at its core is about climate change and the world's impact and human impact on it, you never raised that with President Trump in a meeting?
The focus of the discussion was on the merits and demerits of what Paris sought to achieve. You know what's interesting about the whole discussion?
When you look at what was achieved, Mr. Pruitt, it's a simple question. Have you ever talked to...
And it was, because the question that Wee Willie was about to let him get away with evading, because he'd already evaded it a couple of times, was... Do you share your boss's opinion that climate change is a Chinese hoax?
The president about whether he believes climate change is real. Does he still believe that it was a hoax launched in China?
I think Joe...
Wouldn't you like to know?
I think what's important, Joe, is that the president has said that when we make decisions on environmental decisions internationally, that we put America's interests first. And
right, I agree with that. The president said the climate is changing.
I agree with that.
We're just trying to get an answer from you. I agree. We should always put America first. I disagree with getting out of Paris because it's voluntary. The goals set were voluntary. But I just want, again, it's important for Americans to know whether their president believes that global warming was hatched as a conspiracy theory in China.
And Joe, I think with respect to the voluntary contributions that you're talking about, the 26 to 28%, when you look at domestically, third-party lawsuits, you've heard about the litigation where the EPA is sued and compels regulatory response. What the framers of the Paris Accord understood is that America would take regulatory steps to carry out that 26 to 28% reduction.
By the way, just so we've got the necessary background for this particular clip, it's worth noting that we are the second largest polluter or second largest generator of carbon, you know, greenhouse gases, CO2, on the planet. And so you know, maybe it was kind of important that we do this, but just so we've got that as background.
And when we're withdrawing through the Energy Independent Executive Order, the Clean Power Plan is an example, that creates a gap of almost 60%. So it created exposure with respect to the obligations created in Paris legally here.
Okay. I'm sorry. I've got to stop. I want to stop it. In this interview has to stop in its tracks until I just get a yes-no answer from you on whether you believe it's important that Americans find out whether their president believes that climate change is a conspiracy theory based out of China.
I mean, the president has indicated, Joe, that the climate is changing. I indicated during my confirmation.
Indicated? I mean, if I, for instance, this is not video, so you can't see it. If I point toward my flying spaghetti monster icon that is mounted on the wall underneath the atomic clock, if I indicate that there's a flying spaghetti monster on the wall, does that necessarily mean that the flying spaghetti monster is real? And see, this climate is changing trope is the latest bullshit bailout position of birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, and trumpansies, and Republicans, and libertarians who get confronted with the idea with, you know, is climate change real? Remember when their default bailout was, well, I'm not a scientist. Remember that? Of course we do. Well, that one fell apart. It didn't have a lot of shelf life to it because you don't have to be a scientist to recognize what is happening in the world around you. We do not leave it solely up to scientists to tell us that if we lick our fingers and stick it in the wall socket, we're going to get shocked. And so when you see in the United States more and more powerful tornadoes blowing through more trailer parks in, well, you know, Scott Pruitt's home state of Oklahoma, when the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, when they say that we're going to have above average strength of hurricanes in this season, part of that is based upon modelings of the effects of climate change in the Atlantic hurricane season. When we see massive flooding in places we didn't see massive flooding before, and places that had 500-year floods 2 years ago have 500-year floods 2 years later, we recognize that, and then we go and we look at the data and we find out that yes, those scientists that these Republicans fucking aren't said, oh, by the way, you're going to have more and more profound and catastrophic storm-related activity. We can, as big-brained primates, say, ha, must be climate change, without being scientists. So now, the fallback is, well, the president has indicated that the climate is changing. Yes, I know. We want to not talk about Trump, okay? But like I said last night, it's almost impossible not to talk about any issue and not talk about his impact on it, because he's a catalyst. He's like something in a chemical equation that when you add to it, it makes it go faster or worse or nastier or more dangerous. He catalyzes processes with his ignorance. Well, that's true. Reverbo pointing out more and more powerful tornadoes going through trailer parks. And Verbo said, just the godless ones. Oh, yes. Heathens in trailer parks. I'm sure that they would be more than happy to agree, as Carol Baker might note, down at the Ballerina Swan Lake Country Club and Trailer Park. Mm-hmm. Visible from the interstate. What a lovely view. But no, now it's, well, he's indicated the climate is changing. But they got this from the evangelical wing of their misbegotten, godforsaken party. Because what they say is, well, I believe in climate change because the climate's always been changing as long as the planet that the Lord made has been here. I mean, its climate was a lot different back 6,000 years ago when the dinosaurs was wandering around. It was a lot harder than it is now. And then we had some ice ages about 50 years after the dinosaurs died out. Dinosaurs was here for about a year and a half. And Ken Ham says, absolutely. And I've got an amusement park in Kentucky that shows gladiators fighting in front of dinosaurs, and it's all tax-free. Too right, Cobra. Yeah. So this is now, well, he's indicated that the climate is changing. It is not the same thing. It is not the answer to the question that Squint put forward. And in fact, the freeze frame, he's got his intellectual glasses on, and he's holding his pen, and he's got his chin tucked between his thumb and his index finger, and but his eyes are closed, and he's clearly cogitating because he knows he is being handed a great big steaming pile of bullshit.
Process that there's a trend with respect to the climate, and moreover, there's a human contribution to it.
Did you notice that the part where the audio dropped out, and that wasn't me, sometimes that's the way it is with these clips, there's a warming trend with respect to the climate. Yeah, uh-huh. But Scott Pruitt has a problem. He can't just answer the question. Because he, as a minion o' Trump, actually has no freaking idea whatsoever what his boss thinks from any second to the next, because even Trump doesn't know what he thinks from any second to the next, because even with light speed, there's a little bit of latency involved between the time when the spirochetes collectively think it and when they transmit it to his autonomic nervous system or his amygdala, or, you know, maybe straight to his tonsils. You take, for instance, the speech that he was supposed to deliver at NATO. The speech actually had in it, pre-written, a sentence reaffirming the U.S. commitment to Article 5 of the NATO Charter. But at the very last minute, the spirochetes decided that they didn't want to say it. And so they made Trump not want to say it. And so he didn't say it, and it caused an international furor. Because everything about the man is determined on a moment-by-moment basis. And if that doesn't give you pause for a little bit of shrieking horror, Nothing will. I mean, the Trumpanzees, the usual suspects, the evangelicals who don't believe it, the Earth is more than 6,000 years old to begin with, the Greg Gianfortes, the young Earth creationist types, well, they think it's all just jolly good fun. And it just, it makes the, because it makes the libtards have a hissy. And it never enters into their itsy bitsy teeny tiny microcephalic brains that one of these mornings he might just decide that he's tired of people being alive on planet Earth and up go the bottle rockets. That's not an exaggeration. When you live in a world where countries are armed to the teeth with nuclear weapons, it only takes one madman to make the party go straight to hell. And that's where we are. So you're back to the climate is changing. You think it's created a warring trend, climate changing.
On whether you believe it's important that Americans find out whether conspiracy theory based out of China.
Indicated, Joe, that the climate is changing. I in my confirmation process that there's a trend with respect to the climate, and moreover, there's a human contribution to it. Measuring that with
it's not real live, honest to God scientists, which Scott Pruitt is not. He's just another pettifogging lawyer lobbyist for the hydrocarbon industry. We've had scientists in the government. The terrifying 8 years of having one of those in our White House. We relied on some, science. It's not hard to measure. What he means when he says it's hard for Trump voters to understand. With one finger up, all at the same time that they're trying to cogitate. But he cannot say, just simply say, yeah, because you know what the easy answer to this is? Well, Joe, I don't know. I watched the campaign just like you did. And gosh, I saw Donald Trump say that climate change is a hoax perpetrated by the Chinese to destroy our manufacturing base. I saw that, Joe. You saw it. So, why are you asking me, Joe? He's on the goddamn record saying that it's a Chinese hoax. Can we please move on now? Can I please offer my scripted responses for why the United States of America decided to fuck the world and get out of the Paris Climate Accords? I mean, I didn't come on this program to tell the truth. What the fuck? Do you think that did you administer me an oath before I came on the set? No, you didn't. I'm here to tell a bunch of goddamn lies, and you're here to listen, and Wee Willie over here is here to throw me the softballs that I then bat out into the outfield, and then you go to break. Okay?
The real question is, what do we do about it? And what we've done as a country is lead through innovation and technology. And as I indicated, since the year 2000, a reduction of over 18% in that CO2 footprint. So you see that through hydraulic fracturing. You see that through horizontal drilling. You won't hear...
What? If I keep this up, Agnes is going to be back here with the blowgun and the Thorazine dart. This is how my day started, okay? And it's not getting any easier on the second listen. This mendacious little prick actually just said that fracking
and horizontal drilling reduce greenhouse gas emissions and CO2 production. And, you know, as compared to other kinds of drilling, let's be charitable here. Maybe it does. But when you burn the shit, you're back in the soup again. And I don't know much about the general demographic of Squintin' the Meat Puppet on any given morning. I don't know if they just hear that and go, well, God bless America. But this stuff's hard on me. I mean, this put me right off my kale and rutabaga yogurt this morning, I'm telling you. Fracking is a carbon reduction strategy. Woo! And I know that for the sake of my innards, I can't drink. And I've never been much of one for that tequila sunrise kind of lifestyle, anywho, you know, the one where you're stumbling by brunch, you know, say 10:30. It makes it really, really difficult to do a program at 6 p.m. if you're stumbling, falling down, commode hugging, drunk by noon. And I was always an expositor of don't drink without a reason. Sun's up, mail's in, somebody's birthday somewhere. Well, that's a reason. Holy shit. Fracking. Because, you know, who needs clean water? Fracking is a carbon footprint reducer. Well, I mean, maybe if you compare it to, like, drying out feces and just setting fire to it. And see, you can't yank down. I mean, Wee Willie Geist's parents must be terribly, terribly proud of him. He looks like he's about 13, and he's pulling down money in excess of $1 million a year. But here's the rub. You can't make that money if you reach across the table and just slap the shit out of an obvious liar like Scott Pruitt with the modern miracle of digital broadcasting and high definition telescreens, you can see individual globules of spit fly out of his mouth. You can't do that and expect to make the $1 million. Dr. Bill talked about this phenomenon a little bit earlier on his program. And you can't expect people to be jealous guardians of the fourth estate and truth and honesty, and at the same time make them beholden to whoever it is that's writing a check for, you know, for 7-8 digits a year. Now, you'll notice that say, Flush Flimball, the oxymoron, what, pulls down $50 million a year, something like that? You'll notice he doesn't call his broadcast enterprise the Truth in Broadcasting. He calls it the Excellence in Broadcasting, which, of course, evades the idea of actually dealing in facts or truth, which means that he can just, you know, sit there and lie like a rug. And poor Joe tried to challenge him on it, but Joe wasn't in the room. Joe was, and it's, if you've never participated that way, it's a little bit difficult. If you're not used to it, especially in a television situation, because you can't necessarily see what's going on in real time. You can get pretty close to real time with audio. Video, it's rather difficult. So he can make the attempt, but he's never going to stop this pathological liar, this pettifogging lawyer for the hydrocarbon industry, who literally, in his tenure as Oklahoma's attorney general, signed a memo from an oil company and just turned it into state policy without so much as a proofread or a reformat job. And they know that because climate change is a planetary, a global process, that they can get away with this as they attempt to gather more wealth at the expense of the ability of a lot of poor people to live on the planet. Because, look, that's who climate change affects the most, poor people. You know, the Trumps of the world can always just, you know, move up a floor higher or build a taller building or, you know, go somewhere that isn't threatened at the moment. I mean, Scott Pruitt's from Oklahoma, but he, by God, does not live in a trailer park, okay? He doesn't live in one of those stick-built, vinyl-siding-clad tract houses in a middle to low income subdivision. Oh, hell no. He's got somewhere to go when the storms come. Yeah, maybe he might lose a roof, but he's not going to lose everything because he has wealth. You know, the worst part of all of this is we ain't nowhere near done.
Hear that from the environmental left. We ought to be exporting that to other nations across the globe so they can convert.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to back this up because we're going to have to hear the entirety of this statement about horizontal fracking because that went through me all over again. I'm sorry. And the environmental left. What left?
Ha! Based out of China.
I mean, the president has indicated, Joe, that the climate is changing. I indicated during my confirmation process that there's a trend with respect to the climate, and moreover, there's a human contribution to it. Measuring that with precision is very difficult. The real question is, what do we do about it? And what we've done as a country is lead through innovation and technology. And as I indicated, since the year 2000, a reduction of over 18% in that CO2 footprint. So you see that through hydraulic fracturing. You see that through horizontal drilling. You won't hear that from the environmental left. We ought to be exporting that to other nations across the globe so they can convert to natural gas and help their power generation.
You just laid out is much different than climate change is a hoax perpetrated by the Chinese. So is your position, the one you just laid out, that the climate is changing, humans have a hand in it, but it's impossible to measure how much they've had a hand in it?
I've said that consistently.
Is that the president's view as well? Is that fair to say?
The president indicated that the climate is changing.
So the answer, in short, is no. The spirochetes still think that it's a Chinese hoax designed to destroy our manufacturing base. But then there's that other weasel phrase. Humans are contributing. Contributing. The big fancy term that we like to use is anthropogenic climate change. Anthropogenic, And I'm gonna rely on some dictionary for this. Anthropogenic is defined as originating in human activity. Originating. Human caused. Not human contributed. Not, oh my God, all those cattle are out there on the plains just standing around up to their kneecaps in their own bovine feces, farting away and changing the climate. And, oh yeah, we burn a little bit of coal, and that contributes to climate change too. And what about the volcanoes? That's contributing. Anthropogenic climate change, otherwise known as reality, is the changing of the global climate that has taken place in the infinitesimally tiny span of, you know, less than, 200 years or so, with the rise of industrialism, especially in Europe and North America. And this is apparently something that is difficult for some sentient primates to wrap what we used to think were big brains around.
How could little old us ever change the climate? I don't know. Don't make no sense to me. I mean, it's a big planet. A lot of air. I don't see how we do that. And besides, Jesus.
Yeah, wow. Okay. Except for the fact that even going back, you know, just 2,200 years, ice cores, you know, back before they fucking melted, ice cores in Greenland showed carbon from massive wood fires in the Iberian Peninsula that was created when the Romans began mining silver in their new colony of Hispania. They deforested the entire, or almost all of the entire swaths of the Iberian Peninsula for the wood necessary to reduce and smelt silver for the wealth of their young empire. And you can see that. And that's nowhere near a scale of, say, an entire couple of continents burning coal primarily at first, and then adding in oil and gas for all they're worth. And I guess that's one of the essential problems with climate change, is getting people, you know how the mathematicians say that that we can hold, what, 7 digits in our heads, and after that it becomes very difficult to hang on to them, you know, in one fell swoop? Or that, you know, we can imagine 10 of something, or 12 of something, or 20 of something, or 100 of something, even 1,000 of something. I mean, you know, you can have 1,000 toothpicks, you can have 1,000 M&Ms, and you can count them and everything. But once you get up into the really, really esoteric numbers, it becomes functionally meaningless. Well, it's the same effect with climate change, I think. It's not catastrophic enough for immediate comprehension, like a house burning down. Hell, you can have a tornado blow through a trailer park in Oklahoma or Alabama, and even the survivors who experienced that monumental expression of meteorologic power.
Well, I don't mean what climate change is real. God's in charge of the climate.
And Wee Willie Geist lets him get away with it.
To which human beings are contributing.
That is not what we're talking about at all. We are talking about a scenario in which, had humanity not begun to burn fossil fuels for all they were worth, this climate would be, the climate of this planet would be radically different in terms of drought, in terms of catastrophic weather events, in terms of magnitude of storms. That's not a contribution, that is causation. And you know what the funny part is? Joe Scarborough let him get away with it too. And Joe Scarborough had a cup of coffee in law school, just like I did. I don't know about Wee Willie Geist. I don't know what his background is. But guess who else is a lawyer? Yeah, that's right. Scott Pruitt was the Attorney General of Oklahoma Stan. And that means he knows what he's doing. He knows that he is essentially misrepresenting the facts. It is not a matter of a contribution by humanity to the changing climate. It is a matter of human activity actually triggering and causing the changing of the climate.
Well, climate's always changing.
Because if humans are only contributing, well, then, you know, there's everything else out there, too, and we really can't do much about all those llamas farting on the Altiplano. I mean, there were llamas before there were people, right? And the llamas were farting, and the cattle and the chickens, they're all farting. And I mean, if there were no humans on the planet, the llamas and the cattle and the cattle and the chickens and the pigs, they'd still all be farting, and so the ice caps would still be melting. Ah! Let's continue.
And again, I think the reason you're asking this question is to get away from the merits and demerits of the Paris Accord. Because this is really about what was decided in Paris, what steps were going to be taken as a result of that accord, and what we've done as a nation to address the CO2 footprint. I mean, Paris has almost become symbolic, and it's really mostly words, not actions. This president is about leading with action and not words.
Okay. Oh, another fucking talking point. This president is about leading with action and not words. Well, you know, I mean, yeah. I guess you could say that it was action when we decided not to get into the League of Nations and let the world trundle along toward the Second World War. Yeah, that's what the United States was doing. We were leading with actions and not words. Because, you know, that League of Nations charter was full of words and, well, you know, the President of the United States can't think of words that are more than 140 characters in a chunk. Again, he's there as a PR flack, not to represent any sort of relationship between, say, science and reality and government policy. Okay, I did not realize that. Steve from Georgia Stan says, Wee Willie Geist used to be Bodie's stooge, Tucker Carlson's right hand. He was Tucker's yes man. That's how he got his start on the TV. Well, okay. And so he got his start as a lick spittle to a guy whose bow tie's too tight. Things begin to make make sense. I guess.
Past administration tried to regulate CO2 twice and failed.
It's not just about Paris, because you guys also repealed the Clean Power Plan. You've come on this
because
show.
Because it's not consistent with the Clean Air Act.
You've come on this show, and you've been promoting coal as an alternative fuel.
I told you it was a hard morning. You come on this show, and you promote coal as an alternative fuel. How can coal be an alternative fuel when it's the basis of the Industrial Revolution? When it's the carbon fuel, it is the alpha, as in alpha and omega. It's the alpha portion of our dependence upon fossil fuels. But Stephen Ratner is right. He does do that. And, oh, by the way, did you notice that, I mean, they didn't repeal the Clean Power Plan because the Marmalade Mugabe is hell-bent on undoing everything that Barack Obama did. Ah, gosh, they did that because it was inconsistent with the Clean Air Act. You know what's inconsistent with clean air? Donald Trump. You know what else is inconsistent with clean air? Scott Pruitt. You know what else is inconsistent with clean air? The entire Republican Party. But I guess I'm just testy that way. Clean coal as an alternative fuel. I think Steve Ratner did his homework.
Fuels, fuel diversity.
Coal, but you've been sort of touting the fact that you're increasing the number of coal jobs, even though the increase is actually much smaller than what you've been saying. So the point is that you're basically promoting fuels and promoting policies that would warm the planet, not stop the warming of the planet, even as you agree that the planet is warming and that it's man-made.
Despite the fact that we've had more energy production since the year 2000 and we've reduced the CO2 footprint through innovation and technology. So what I'm saying is that as we electricity in this country, it is not a wise thing to limit the number of resources. It creates vulnerabilities. We need more diversity from coal, natural gas, oil, hydro, nuclear across the board.
Oh, goody. Nuclear. By all means, more nuclear. Because Fukushima, who wouldn't want that in their backyard? Why not? That's what coal is, and oil and gas. It's diversity. That's what. Never mind that coal, oil, and gas, and nuclear for that matter, for as long as we're basing it on nuclear fusion and not fission. No, fission and not fusion. Damn it, I get them bass-ackwards. As long as it takes uranium to get the damn thing started, that's fission. Sometimes I think I should just be gone fishing. All of those things require dependence upon finite resources, which in their essence, the obtaining of such, create hellscapes wherever they are obtained. I'm guessing Scott Pruitt has never spent a night out camping, say, in the middle of the toxic hellscape that is the tar sands of Alberta. No, never. I might have been squired around a little bit, but then he went and, you know, stayed in a hotel and got a hooker and, you know, nice things like that. On the other hand, as noted, given the projected lifespan of the sun, assuming that the Imperial Space Navy of Norblap 9 doesn't decide to blow it up, given the lifespan of the sun, solar energy is the very definition of infinite. Remember that? Remember those numbers that we can't really wrap our heads around meaningfully? Yeah, 4 billion is one of them. That's what the expected lifespan of the sun. 4 billion. And that's another one of those problem things that the sun's going to burn out someday. And that means God's creation is going to be a toasted marshmallow with a hard iron center, sort of a galactic Tootsie Pop. How many licks does it take to get to the center? One, let's find out. One, two, three. Some giant animated owl grinds through the iron core of the once verdant blue-green world we called home. But if that's true, then that says that the idea that the Earth was created by an exterior, all-powerful being is not unlikely, but impossible. And don't think for a minute that religion, especially fundamentalist religion, but religion generally, isn't at the heart of the inability of a lot of human beings to come to terms with the reality of climate change. As it is.
And what we ought to be talking about is how we burn coal, how we burn electricity using natural gas and the rest, using the latest technology and innovation to reduce emissions.
See, that's the problem. He thinks that he can burn clean coal. He thinks that he can burn coal without any emissions. He thinks he can burn coal without adding to the carbon footprint of the planet. You know those reductions in greenhouse gases he was talking about since the year 2000? You know what also happened since the year 2000? The percentage share as a part of our... And fallen, and fallen, and fallen. ...thousand or so, you can look this up. Coal as a percentage of our national energy bill was up in the neighborhood of 50%. Guess what percent he was talking about? By coal has fallen, ha! By about 18%. Advances in fuel economy in automobiles have played a role. Hell, the rise of... But, yeah, all those liberals out there running around in their Priuses, they've helped, too. Since the year 2000, and let's be clear about this, since the year 2000, we haven't learned to burn coal any better than we were burning it in 1999. Or 1989. Or 1979. Okay? I think it's in the film The Last Mountain, where a guy named Bill Rainey, who is a flack for the West Virginia Coal Association, stands in front of a coal-fired power plant, which happens to be the coal-fired power plant nearest me. And he says, this is a state-of-the-art plant.
Well, it turns out it wasn't, and it isn't. It was actually a really low-tech, ancient tech, and a vile polluter for, you know, people who breathe air. But it's okay. You can just lie about it. And while I recognize that our side has its fair share of people who don't understand the issue any better than say, an upstanding Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christian, the fact of the matter is, one is a part of the problem and the other is a part of the solution. Guess which one is which? Because the entirety of Scott Pruitt's self-image, self-worth, all those things that you talk about on the couch with the shrink, is attached to his fawning, obsequious, servile obeisance to the hydrocarbon industry, he, by definition, cannot come to terms with the reality that if humanity is to continue as a viable species on this planet, we have to stop burning this shit. No matter how much money it makes for him and his masters. And for that reason, I would not trade places with Scott Pruitt for love nor money. We struggle here. We struggle to keep this radio network on the air. We struggle to meet fundraising goals from night to night to night. I don't know when 1 month begins, if we'll be on the air the following month. But we've managed to be pretty lucky over the last, and there's really no luck involved. We've managed to keep it going because people find value in having a little bit of truth-telling going on, a little bit of fact-based discussion happening. And, you know, some food porn and carrying on and cowbells and obligatory Star Trek references and things like that. We struggle here. We're struggling tonight. $305, and last I checked, zero. Zero. We're at zero. We're the program ending at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. We are well on the way to a $505 fundraising goal tomorrow evening, or maybe $445 or whatever the subscribers take it down to, and thank you very kindly for whatever that turns out to be. I would adore to cover this roof with solar panels and tell Appalachian Power and their antiquated, rickety, coal-fired disaster contraption to go fuck itself. But, you know, that's to go all the way off the grid is in excess of a $100,000 proposition. Just like me getting the surgery is in excess of a $100,000 proposition. So we kind of got to let that one go. That's a go play the Powerball kind of thing. But even to generate most of my own electricity for this network and still be tied to the grid would be a noble undertaking. But regardless of all of that, I have something that Scott Pruitt does not have and can never have. I really am free. And you're really free.
because your well-being, my well-being, does not depend upon how far we can stick our lily-white noses, in the case of us white folks, stick our lily-white noses up the carboniferous asses of executives from coal companies and gas companies and oil companies. And that's a that's a definition of freedom that Scott Pruitt Donald Trump and any number of soulless fossil fools can never understand. Brother Deacon Asa says, okay, let's say you commie liberals get your wish and we abolish coal in that there great country. How is you gonna barbecue then, huh? Huh? Wood? But, yep, yeah, right. I get it. I get it, Asa. Of course, I'm an old hand at this. I remember when the fiends of coal would, do you have a car? How you reckon they make that steel, huh? You goddamn liberal commie tree huggers. You need to start walking and freezing to death in the fucking dark. You don't like coal. And it never really dawns on them that humanity, within the scope of humanity's existence, we succeeded as a species without coal for a lot longer than we've succeeded with it. And by the time all is said and done, it may be that coal, oil, and gas were actually contrary to our being successful as a species. Yeah, I know. We need some nuclear.
That's what our example has been as a country. Joe. We've reduced it by 18%+.
But that's how, right. Ah, it's painful. The stupid, it hurts as us. But I felt like this clip was important.
World's impact and human impact on it. You never raised that with President Trump in a meeting.
The focus of the discussion was on the merits and demerits of what Paris sought to achieve. You know what's interesting about the whole discussion?
When you look at what was achieved, when you look at what was achieved, Mr. Pruitt, it's a simple question.
Yeah, we're not going to, no. You can only have so much fun hearing Joe Scarborough have a stroke. Oh, and well, it is Titanic Tuesday, and that means that we've still got more Titanic intellects to deal with, and perhaps from more mundane, pedestrian sources. It all doesn't have to be Scott Pruitt. No. Hey, thanks, Jack. Thank you very kindly, Jack in Shreveport, getting us started on fundraising. We're down to 265, $265 to go to keep us from being in a giant hole for prayer meeting Wednesday. 265. Thank you. Thank you very kindly, Jack. Hopefully others will jump in alongside you.
because it's sort of a new month, and we've got new month and old month bills to deal with. So I tell you what, it's 21 past the hour, and I keep forgetting that I'm only on until 8, and I want to provide the opportunity for some conversation if people are so inclined. So if you we will take a break, and if you, because it's also Tuesday, which means that we've got the Green News Report coming from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. So if you want to get involved in the conversation, well, you know how to do it. 304-574-8178. Or 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. That's the stress line. Works for some, not for others. And I'm not entirely certain why, but one of these days, right? So then there's Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. All of these things are available. Ron, in the not climate change induced deluged north, says coal may be a modern curse, but I believe that things have been going down the tubes ever since the invention of the flush toilet. Ha! Shows what you know. Everything's been going downhill since we figured out how to put seed, that seeds we put in the ground would grow. A few million years from now, that six-foot-tall race of sentient cockroaches are going to realize, via the work of their six-foot-tall sentient cockroach paleontologists and archaeologists, that humanity fucked itself when it became sedentary, when it started growing crops, when it allowed one human to lord it over the other humans and give him part of their food for the privilege of him not sending his thugs out to kill them. I mean, let's do remember that hunter-gatherers have more leisure time than any average member of the Anthropocene. Is that what we're calling it? Well, you know, modern humanity. Modern fossil fuel-fired humanity. Still, there's merit in the flush toilet argument, too. You really do get a much broader sense of perspective when you have to go stomp out through a couple of feet of snow and shovel out the doorway to the outhouse and watch for spiders and you know, sit there and work that page from the Sears and Roebuck catalog into a nice soft quality in order to, you're right, it toughens you up. So like I said, we'll take a break and come back and do some conversation radio and hopefully reduce the fundraising goal by another. I guess it can't all happen all at once, but by some $265. Thanks again. This is listener-supported conversation radio. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Shiver in my bones, just think. It's Tuesday, June 6, 2017.
I reaffirm clearly that the Paris Agreement remains irreversible and will be implemented.
Fallout is swift and global after Trump abandons Paris Climate Agreement.
Aren't you and the president talking about protecting the horse and buggy business just as cars come online?
Even Fox News questions the economic case for exiting the UN Climate Accord.
Pittsburgh is the poster child of showing why the Paris Agreement is good economics for the United States.
As states and cities step up to fulfill U.S. pledges. Plus, India announces it will sell only electric vehicles by 2030.
They're moving ahead. We're not. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I said during my confirmation process that climate change is occurring, that human activity contributes to it.
He's also said it was a hoax.
Well, Chris, the point here, and to your question,
the point is something that I'll figure out in a second. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I am so sorry that it has been so slow of late in the environmental news world. I hope you can come up with something to cover today.
Oh, I'm sure I'll manage. Okay. Say about the global swift fallout following United States President Donald Trump's announcement on Thursday that he will withdraw the United States from the United Nations Paris Agreement on Climate Change, the landmark global accord signed by 195 nations to cut man-made carbon emissions that cause dangerous global warming.
Yeah, that went over really well, didn't it?
Yeah, not so much. World leaders have all reaffirmed that they will move on with the global climate agenda without the U.S. French President Emmanuel Macron threw in a little light trolling when he reiterated that the Paris Agreement will be implemented globally.
We all share the same responsibility. Make our planet great again.
Oh, snap.
Ironically, Trump's withdrawal finally got the broadcast news networks to actually cover climate change and the Paris Agreement. EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt did a victory lap on all of the Sunday morning news shows, but he did get some pushback. Fox News's Chris Wallace questioned the wisdom of retreating from the global clean energy race.
The U.S. now employs more than double the number of people in the solar industry that it does in coal. Aren't you and the president talking about protecting the horse and buggy business just as cars come online?
Wow. If you got Fox News, Chris Wallace asking those questions, You know those guys are in trouble. And by the way, Scott Pruitt had no other answer other than, well, we need coal around near the power plants in case there's a national emergency. Well, you know what? Fine. Dig up some coal, put it in a pile, put it next to a power plant, and let the rest of us get on with a clean, livable planet.
Here at home, a new poll finds nearly 60% of Americans oppose Trump's decision to withdraw from the Paris Accord, and that includes a quarter of Republicans who say that they believe it will hurt America's standing in the world and will damage the U.S. economy. American states and cities are defying Trump's decision to halt U.S. action on climate change. On Friday, they announced the formation of the U.S. Climate Alliance. It's a growing group of cities, states, and corporations that will submit their own pledges to the United Nations in order to fulfill the United States' promised emissions targets that Trump has abandoned under the Paris Agreement. As of airtime, 12 governors, including two Republican governors, and more than 200 mayors have signed on. Trump singled out the city of Pittsburgh in his speech.
I was elected to represent the citizens of Pittsburgh, not Paris.
Well, that didn't go over well with the guy who actually represents Pittsburgh, Mayor Bob Peduto, a Democrat, who touted that Pittsburgh has actually reinvented itself as a green technology hub.
I was outraged. Pittsburgh is the poster child of showing why the Paris Agreement is good economics for the United States, and what we did today sets us back decades.
Peduto announced he signed new executive orders mandating the city's government will move to 100% renewable electricity sources and will convert its vehicle fleet to hybrid and electric cars.
It should also be noted that while Donald Trump thinks he represents Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh voted 80% for Hillary Clinton.
Speaking of electric cars, the government of India has announced new plans to sell only electric cars by 2030. That's to reduce the deadly fossil fuel air pollution that kills more than a million people in India alone every year. The move to electric cars is projected to save India more than $60 billion a year in imported oil costs, and the switch to electric vehicles could decrease India's carbon emissions by nearly 40% by 2030.
And yet, for all of those years, Republicans kept telling us that China and India would never do anything to reduce emissions. Going out now to buy Tesla stock. For all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Electric car on road so dark to change the end, rewrite the start. Electric car, so good so far. Electric car on verdant green, invent a turn.
25 minutes before the hour, ordinarily on an ordinary program, this would be the halfway point of the program. As it is, it's the 25 minutes to go in the program this evening, because we're knocking off at 8 p.m. so I can retool everything and turn everything around to sit in for the Malloys at 9 Eastern Daylight Time. I hope you'll join in. And listen, let me ask a favor of you, okay? Just sort of take it as read on this. I don't do this very often. If you're going to listen to Malloy, listen. I mean, the other streams are here for you if you need them. But listen on Progressive Voices. Okay? I have a reason for saying what I say. I don't just do things. Listen on Progressive Voices. And let them see the numbers. Okay? Did you do that, please? And because of the way the setup is here, there should be, if there has been any buffering, I haven't seen any at all, but if there is, if you're listening on Progressive Voices, there shouldn't be any at all, period, nada, nil, niente, nihil, nothing, because it's an entirely different streaming process. So when that, just, you know, pretty please. And again, we've got $365 to raise in the next 23 minutes or so. or 22 hours and 23 minutes or something like, no, 21 hours and 23 minutes, something like that. But, yeah, hopefully. Hey, it's been a while since we talked to Clarity. Let's run over and check in. Hey, Clarity.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
I'm good. You got Mayakoba's in the pot, do you?
Yeah, well, you know, I had some stuck away, and you know, and I'd been eating black beans and pinos, and then you said, oh, I don't like black beans. And then you stated your preference, and I went, damn, I got some of those yellow pinos back in the back there. I'm going to fix me up some this week. And by golly, today's the day.
There, and they make the most wonderful creamy bean soup there ever was.
Yeah, and I like my beans creamy. But I think black beans, for me, have a little more iron in them. So I'm just...
Yeah, they probably do. And certainly from a we all need fiber standpoint, I think they're more fibrous as well.
Yes, they are. They definitely move things right on by.
She said with obvious tact and aplomb.
That's right. I sent you a little video, and you got a glimpse of my third gig last week. Turned out to be one of those once in a lifetime, I hope, experiences. We played for a closing ceremony for a Ride for Life. It was a motorcycle group, and they didn't like us very much. Just before we even played, they kind of gave us. I was picking up this vibe, and then I was listening to the conversation, and oh my God, Bob, it was like all the things that we think are kind of cool and important, they thought was just wrecking the place. And
you mean it wasn't all the things that we think matter is not making America great again like America needs to be?
Well, yeah, and they actually mentioned Trump in talking about how things used to be, and hopefully they'll get back to it, that they just couldn't trade guns and sell guns like they used to. You know, it's like once you buy a gun registered, then if someone else sells it to a felon, then you're liable for it, you know, and it's just not right.
Wait, time out. I don't even want to be within 100 miles of that conversation. But Clarity, the fact of the matter is, I'm probably within, you know, 45 feet of that conversation if we get right down to it.
Yeah. Anyway, the comment kind of got even dicier. Thing went on. They were talking about, you know, how the state of Portland. We don't live in the state of Oregon. All those liberal people are running our lives over here and just free and be ourselves and taking all our tax money and
swapping guns. I mean, is that what Portland's doing to them, making them wear clothes and not swap guns? I gotta say, you got me at a little loss.
Well, just kind of bitching about it, and then they got Kate Brown, who has done her best to True Stream going so that we don't have the revenue of miss here. Our tax rate per capita, we have no state, and so she's been having trouble, you know, funding the health plan, and you know, we're running a deficit for this biennium, and she's just having a heck of a time trying to run a good state and taking care of people. At the same time, we've got in Walden's district, there's people that don't even care if we have libraries. I think I mentioned that before. And it's insane. It makes sense, though. They don't want books around because give people the wrong ideas about things. But anyway, the conversation also amongst these, you know, men who, you know, they were laborers, most of them, and they talked about different works that they'd been doing, you know, concrete and driving water truck, and they had mixed feelings about the drought being over because every year the fire season got a little longer, And, you know, you could make $300 a day driving a water truck. And then somebody jumped in and said, oh, that ain't nothing, you know, and it got up to one guy said he was making $1,000 a day. And then some guy jumped in and said, well, I worked on this retrofit on the coal fire plant, and I made $55,000 in 6 months.
And here's a fun thing, because we've got some experience with those around here, too, Clarity. You know why those coal-fired power plants had to be retrofitted?
Clean Air Act.
Right. Those job-killing regulations gave somebody who hates the EPA a $55,000 payday in the span of 6 months, but he's going to vote for Trump because he's going to make America great again, going to get rid of them job-killing regulations. Well, dipshit, you're not going to be getting any $55,000 retrofitting jobs now, are you? Huh?
No, and the thing is that $55,000, even though it's way above the, you know, the medium income here is about $15,000 a year. You know, most people are right at the poverty level that, you know, even people are working. But $55,000 comes out to middle class. You know, if you got two or three kids, that's, you know, that's middle class working wages. And that's labor. I mean, a union job. And the other thing they mentioned, and it was funny how they described it, they're building this huge place and nobody's talking about it, but it's going to be a backup for Google in case all their computers crash, they can save everything in the cloud, but nobody knows what it is. And it's like, what do you mean they don't know what it is? The sucker's like 7 football fields indoors, you know, where they're going to put this, storage farm.
But it's going to be like all vaporous, like a cloud, because I don't know how they're going to keep a cloud in a building. Do you?
Anyway,
I wish I wasn't halfway serious about that, Clarity.
I know. Well, and the thing was, after this conversation, we're getting ready to play, and the sergeant at arms comes up to us and says, don't play. We're going to have our raffle now, and you guys just go over there and sit down and wait, and I'll tell you when.
So, oh, no. And see, that's the perfect moment for the Chico Marx thing where you go, oh, no, if we don't play, you can't afford that.
Yeah, really. So 45 minutes goes on, this raffle, and he comes out and goes, well, you guys can play now. So we go out, and we play one song, Bob. And by the end of the song, there was only 2 people left. They got up en masse and just got the fuck out of there.
Yeah, they were there for the raffle.
Yeah, exactly. And
well, do tell, what did they raffle off?
Oh, it was mostly like
guns.
No, there wasn't any guns. Tools and barbecue, you know, ware and plates and Chinaware and stuff you give away for graduation that they probably are re-gifting to each other because their kids didn't graduate.
So what was the one song you did manage to play?
Well, I kind of did my version of Born to be Wild. And
nice.
they didn't think it was, you know, manly enough.
It was. Well, as noted in a previous conversation, I really think you guys, well, y'all, I really think, I mean, that's sort of a generic, but I really think y'all need to have the Rawhide theme in your hip pocket for just such occasions.
Yeah, probably so. Well, I started, you know, when they turn their head at me when I'm singing Johnny Cash, to finish off going, Johnny Cash with boobies. You don't see that every day.
No, hell no.
No.
I mean, that's one of those things you sit around the Thanksgiving table, the gum and your cream corn at 93, telling the great grandkids about. Did I ever tell you the time I got so liquored up I thought Johnny Cash had tits?
And I asked him to come home with me. So that's all I got to add.
Oh, God, Clarity. We've done it again, you know.
Yeah.
took a perfectly acceptable conversation and dragged it down into the gutter.
Well, and, you know, the thing that saved us, besides the fact that our audience left, was it started raining shortly after there. So I guess God came and cleansed the land.
I thought you lived in the part of Oregon where it don't rain.
Well, this is that, you know, that China.
Oh, it's the Chinese hoax again. Yeah. And you know, there's probably human beings contributing to it with their barbecue grills.
Well, and you know, it must be God's will, because that Walden said that dust ain't a real pollutant. And I guess God's come along and kept the dust down to make it us forget the EPA ever did nothing for us.
Job killing assholes.
Oh, you know, let them suck dust because it ain't polluting.
Yeah, it's good and good for you.
Suck a big old cup of dust and tell them that Greg sent you.
Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper? Dust.
Well, that was a saying in my family, is he who eats the most venison eats the most dirt.
Wow. Not real fastidious about the deer caping and deer stripping and deer butchering then?
Field dressing in dry country, it can be a real dirty mess.
It's going to be a little gritty.
It's going to be a little gritty. So, but that was a way not to insult the cook. You'd say, well, there's quite a bit of sand in this here venison, but good.
Yeah, it's kind of like you go bird shooting and you just kind of got to be a little bit dainty and discreet in a spitting out of the. Of the particles of shot, you know, from that lovely breast of a pheasant. Yes.
Yeah, I remember one of the preachers that had Sunday dinner at our house had that first experience eating with us, having a little piece of pheasant, and he had some buckshot there. He didn't realize that when you shot the bird, the shot went right into the meat.
Oh, I said buckshot on a bird, and there was bird left?
My dad was a pretty good shot.
Oh, that'd be like one piece of buckshot. I mean, double up buck, damn, that's some shooting.
Bob, no, we use a little bit smaller gauge than you folks back east, because you shoot turkeys, and we ain't hardly got no turkeys around here.
Ain't hardly? Not much?
Ain't
hardly.
And you
ain't,
use
ain't, ain't airy much in the way of turkey birds.
No, and you use double on a quail, you might find one feather.
Right, that's what I was saying. I mean, around here for the pheasants and grouse and so forth, we usually go with your four shot. And mm-hmm. and even so, because that way, if you miss one and you don't catch it with a molar, it's small enough that it'll just go on through.
Yeah. Gravity take its course.
I tell you what, no, all kidding aside, fixed some, we went pheasant hunting once. And, well, yes, there were a couple that just exploded in mid-flight, because it's called wing shooting, not body shooting, right?
Yeah.
But the ones that we managed to get home, roasted those suckers and stuffed them with a concoction of apples and onions and crushed juniper berries.
Okay, yeah.
And just sort of wrapped the breast around them and then we wrapped the breast in bacon. Not exactly a vegan feast, Clarity, but and then basted them along the way. And you want to talk about? Who knew that apples and onions would make it such a good combination together? But it was a good sweet onion and a good tart apple, and it worked out quite nicely.
Oh, yeah.
Had to get a little food porn into the program here, and I appreciate it.
Well, when I was in college, my roommate cooked a goose and put a bottle and a half of port in it and cooked it overnight slow. And I think I was drunk for 2 days after having that.
I was going to say, you could cook a rock in a bottle and a half of port, and everybody'd be pretty much happy.
Well, I didn't mind the greasiness. You know, a goose can be a little greasy.
Well, they can be that, and depending on the circumstances, goose is not. Duck for people who've not eaten duck, duck ain't chicken.
No.
And duck can take some getting used to. I've got a dear friend, and she said she's up near 70, and she said, all my life, I always wanted a Christmas goose, because you read Dickens' A Christmas Carol, and he sends Tiny Tim out to, or he sends the little kid out in the street to go and get a Christmas goose, and he takes it over to the Cratchits and everything, and they have Christmas goose. And she said, that was the nastiest damn thing I ever ate in my life, Bob.
Hence the port.
Hence the port. But then, you read up on those merry oldie English food traditions, and you find out that in the royal, majestic, noble, serene, gracious, highness courts at table, I just got done reading the about a medieval feast that was put up by Charles V or the Holy Roman Emperor Charles IV. And they were eating aspic of beef and roasted swan and seared peacock. You get the idea back then that if it slowed down for a minute, there was some nobleman that was going to eat it. And I'm sorry, if goose is a little sketchy, I just can't imagine that swans, but yeah. And they'd roast they'd roast the peacock and then stick the big fan of peacock tail feathers back on it. And all the medieval lords and ladies would go, ooh, and ah. And give me some more of that. Yeah. I don't know how we got here, but it was a damn fine time getting here, Clarity, and I do appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And last night, I appreciate that quote about raising the corn to raise the pigs to buy more land to raise the corn. I love that.
Carl Sandburg.
Loved him as a child.
And you know what? He turned out to be a pretty good poet as an adult, too.
Love you, Bob.
All right, Clarity. You take care. Have a good evening.
Yeah, have a good time filling in for Mike.
I'm a-gonna. About time to turn it around. Thanks now. And lucky Clarity going to have a big bowl of Mayakobas. Yum, yum. Thank you very kindly to Glenn for jumping in and taking us down to 2:45. And thank you very much to Roy. Thank you, Roy, for taking us down to 2:15. And Ralphs, here in the waning moments of this Titanic Tuesday, has put a $25 challenge on the table, which, if met, will take us down to... wait a minute. Will take us down to 165. So thank you, Ralphs, for putting the $25 challenge out there. Hopefully somebody will meet it, and we won't have near the hole in the budget that we otherwise would have. All right. Thank you, Ralphs. Let's see. We got somebody trying to reach the program. What's going on? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
Pretty good. You're going to have to turn your audio down.
All right. Hold on. Keep on forgetting this headset doesn't really work that well. All right.
Oops. Dadgummit. Hold on here. I screwed things up. This will be on me if I can. Yeah, I didn't mean to hang up.
Bob.
Yeah, I didn't mean to hang up on you. You there?
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Got a couple of minutes. What's up?
Yeah, I know. Remember we were talking a couple of months back, or actually a couple of weeks back, about I know how it is to try to make a living with old equipment. And you were talking about your mixing equipment.
Yeah.
I'm sitting on the side of the road with my hazards flashing in Maine.
Oh, no.
That truck just let go.
Oh, what? Did the drivetrain go out or throw a rod or what?
No, nothing that catastrophic. I think crank position sensor went again, which tells the injectors when to fire.
Well,
I'm driving along, cooking at about 70 miles per hour, and you just, oh, pew, and that was it. Done.
Oh. You have my, it's Les, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I thought. You have my complete and unalloyed sympathy because, it was just a couple of weeks ago. Well, it was what made May such a booger, that I was toddling down the road when the brake pad decided to fly out and the caliper decided to turn loose and wheels decided not to roll anymore.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a real party. So
yeah, I had one of those in this truck, too. Lock caliper.
Yeah, that sucks a real lot.
Yep. Had to get towed for that, too. Yeah. That was just the caliper alone. I never actually listened to the program.
Well, no, to this day I don't understand why, but no, it just dropped a brake pad out. So then when I touched the brakes, the caliper went up naked against the rotor, and the party was over.
Wow.
And
did it come out clean or did it do any damage on the way out? It's like,
oh no, the rotor was ruined. The caliper was toast. That turned into a $2,000 disaster.
Oh.
By the time we were done with parts and labor, and the rental, and the new tires that were occasioned, because I left a whole bunch of tires. You know, a few molecules at a time in a nice stripe down the highway.
Oh.
So that was set of tires, man. Parts, yada, 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 yep, party.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I got to get out of here, Les, but have you got help on the way?
Yeah. In fact, it's a funny thing. I was in the same place 3 years back when I blew my turbo, so I'm calling the same people that came and got me the last time.
Oh, so they're going to walk up and it's going to be all hail fellow, well met, and all of that?
Yeah, like, hey, you know, hey, returning customer, need a discount.
All right, then. Man. You take it easy. Good luck. Right. Holler if you need any help, and we'll see what we can do. If they don't show up or anything.
This. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I got this, but, yeah. I'm prepared for this kind of thing.
No, that's just the one. Yeah, that's the one where you just look up and go, what a day.
I don't even do that anymore.
Oh, man.
Okay, that happened.
So you've perfected your Zen then.
Yeah, completely. I don't even raise my blood pressure up a bit. I just sit there like, all right, we're doing this again. No problem. You've been here before.
Oh, man. You're going to be reincarnated as, like, you know, a member of the Hindu pantheon or something. I mean, you're about 58 and a half miles from Nirvana. I mean, you're right there.
Yep. Completely sober, too, on top of that.
Well, that I don't know if that's a plus or not, but
well, that depends on what they tell me when they finally come to get me.
Well, that's right, the thing, after. And it might be a little, you know, stay in touch.
Yeah.
All right, you take care, Les.
Bye. All right, Bob. Have a good one.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye. Calling from the side of the road somewhere in Maine, that's our buddy Les. Time to get out of here. Reminder, there's a $25 challenge on the table. It'll take us down to $165 in fundraising to go to make tomorrow's fundraising goal $365, which is better by a long shot than any $400. So
Thanks very kindly, everybody, for that. Here in about, 57 minutes, we'll fire up the campfire over at the Malloy joint. I hope you'll be there. And remember, if you're going to listen, you humor me and listen on Progressive Voices, okay? Because that way I don't have to worry about buffering. And I kind of get freaked out a little bit when I start seeing, oh, it's buffering. And not good for my head. So if you just listen on Progressive Voices, you shouldn't have to worry about any buffering issues at all for the Malloy program. Of course, yeah, we can't do that here. But anyway, we'll catch you in a few. Thanks, everybody, for making all of this happen. Thank you to our kind contributors who keep it, who keep the lights on here and keep this little network going. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you, the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. And welcome home, Boss Man Wayne. See you in a little bit.